everyone. I'm Evelyn.
And I'm Lara. We are the host of Once Upon a Niger podcast, where we take you down history lane as we break down stories about people, places, and events in Nigeria's past and present.
That's right. In every episode, we will take you on a journey of our own discoveries as we feed our curiosity and connect with our heritage. Join us to figure out how the chronicles of the past can help write tomorrow's tale. Yes, today we are going to be reviewing the film 76. Mm-hmm. But before we get into what that film is about and share our thoughts on it, I'm going to play a little game.
Right.
The film 76 has got lots of espionage, sort of detective undercover work going on. So I want to play two truths and one lie.
Ooh. Let me put on my Agatha Christie's Poirot on.
Okay.
On and see.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you two truths and one lie about myself.
Okay.
You're not going to know which is which.
Okay.
But you're going to try and decipher and determine which one is the lie.
Okay.
So I'll tell you, I'll give you three statements.
Okay.
And you tell me which one is a lie.
Okay.
Okay. So statement number one, I have met a future head of state, future monarch, Prince Charles and Camilla at Buckingham Palace. Statement number two, while I was out to dinner in central London, I saw another member of the royal family and his wife, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Oh, okay.
Statement number three. Unfortunately, when I was unwell and in hospital, Queen Elizabeth was doing a round in the hospital and I saw her make her way to another ward. So they all have the royal family in common. Which one is the liar?
I'm not sure how. Well, it depends on when you were ill and you were in the hospital and Queen Elizabeth was making a round.
Why are you thinking that?
I can consider it being realistic that you might have met a future, like, Prince Charles. Just because Harry and Meghan in London. Can I ask what year this was? Because, obviously.
Okay. Ask which year.
Yeah, what year was it? Oh. Did you meet Meghan and Markle? Harry. I said Meghan and Markle. Meghan. Did you meet Meghan and Harry?
That was in 20... Was it 2020? So soon before they went off to the States. It was around the time they had announced that they were no longer being senior members of the royal family.
I swear there was pandemic all of that time before they did.
It was just before then.
I think that's the one. That's the lie.
I think
that's the lie. Because Queen Elizabeth, I'm thinking, making her rounds in the hospital. Again, I guess you didn't see her, you just know she was making rounds.
Yeah.
I think her.
Like, there was a crowd following her.
Yeah.
So, like, as I was, like, standing, I can't remember where I was going,
yeah,
but I saw her and, like, you know, her entourage,
yeah,
following her.
Okay. I think Harry and Meghan is the lie. You seen Harry and Meghan.
Okay. Is that your final answer? I want to play Who Wants to Play.
Final answer. <Da-da>. Final answer, Chris. Or who's the new guy who does it?
I have no idea. What, Jeremy guy, Clarkson?
Jeremy Clarkson, I don't like him.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's another conversation. Okay, so final answer. You think that I have not met Harry and Meghan?
Yeah.
Okay, so the two truths and one lie is, truth number one, I have seen Prince Charles and Camilla at Buckingham Palace.
Okay.
When I was a girl guide, they invited youth groups to Buckingham Palace and we had to, like, sing the anthem and they walked by. Wow. So that's truth number one. Truth number two is that I have seen Harry and Meghan.
Have you?
Yeah. I didn't personally speak to them, But I was like in central London coming from a restaurant or something, and there was a crowd by this charity place, and they were going to do an appearance.
Yeah.
And there was like lots of paparazzi and stuff, and I was like looking with a friend trying to figure out what was all about, and then there were paparazzi, and they said, oh, Harry and Meghan are going to come. So there's a photo of Harry and Meghan where she's like wearing a bright, she's wearing like a blue dress.
Is that the Tokos, the yes. Tokos dress? Oh, right.
Yeah, and it was raining.
She had an umbrella.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you saw her there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow, check you out. Yeah.
Look at that, just coming upon one.
I should have stuck to my...
So the lie is that I was in the hospital when Queen Elizabeth was doing the rounds.
I should have stuck to that. That was my first, that was my initial, my gut feeling. Then I thought, well, she could be doing the rounds, and I don't know what hospital it was, but...
Do you watch Death in Paradise?
I don't watch that. No, is that something I should?
It's like a detective show on BBC, but it's just the way they come about they go about the investigation, and the way he detects the answers or the, you know, the mystery. It's just like, that's not actually gonna stand in court if you solve a case like that. A few times I'm just like, really? How did he arrive at that decision? But yeah, okay. Well, I can't really think of a two truths and two truths and a lie. Funny. So yeah, I'll just play the detective today.
Play the detective today.
Well, I'll lose to win another day.
And what, to win another day?
To win another day.
Okay. Anyway, yeah. So. That was two truths on one lie. And that fits into the theme of the film that we're going to be reviewing today. So this episode is all about the 2016 film, 76, which is a Nigerian historical fiction drama.
Because we've promised to bring you guys historical films.
Yeah. Fitting with our theme of stories and history. Once Upon a Niger, Tales from the Past. Yeah, and that film stars Ramsey Nouah, and who plays the character Joseph Dewa, and Rita Dominic, who plays his wife Susie. So just a brief summary, and FYI, if you've not seen this film, spoilers, spoilers, spoilers.
Go watch it, Netflix.
Yes. Yes, it's on Netflix. So the film is set 6 years after the Civil War has ended.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually fits nicely with our previous episodes. There's a officer, Joseph Ramsey Nouah. He's from the Middle Belt, apparently, but we'll get into the...
I said apparently.
Well, we'll get into that anyway. And he's married to a woman from the southeastern region, an Igbo woman, Susie. However, their relationship and their marriage is marred by and strained by lots of like military postings. Now, in 1976, there's a lot of tension, and the context is a real event, the 1976 military coup, where General Murtala Mohammed was assassinated, and Joseph's character is thought to have been one of the coup plotters. So the film follows the emotional drama that ensues because he's been entangled in this conspiracy. His friend is involved. There's a lot of betrayal, just really sad affairs, which probably actually mirrors a lot of what happened in real life. But that is the gist and the main plot of the film.
And like we've said, the reason we're talking about it is because it fits really nicely into our aim of bringing you guys history that has been told via film or other forms of media entertainment, so that we can delve also into those historical moments that these films are trying to explore. So, yeah. The film, how did you find it?
Generally, coming off the back of like our review of Half of the Yellow Sun, and I think you made a comment about the fact that Half of the Yellow Sun, the film, didn't go into the actual reasons for why the Biafran War started.
Yeah.
I feel as though this film did attempt, it seemed more explicit to me anyway, that this film was trying to touch on the reasons for why the 1976 coup happened, mm-hmm. which I liked. I liked that there was like this conspiracy. I liked that there was back and forth in terms of time periods to like show the unfolding of the coup plot. So those were like my initial things. Even when the film started, I thought like the way the camera sort of zoomed in on Ramsay Nouah, it was dark, he was in prison, then the light just opened up the door, opened up. I said, okay, they're setting the scene, I'm feeling this. So yeah, that's what I liked. And I think there were some nice attempts at some stylistic choices, but I don't think they all quite landed. But yeah, those are my like initial thoughts. What about you?
I think similar to yourself, I liked how they explored the story that they were telling and the level of detail they went into in comparison to like Half of a Yellow Sun, for example. I loved the tension, the way the story was told. Some of the characters were well developed as well.
Which characters were those?
I think what's his name? The betrayer, his friend.
The betrayer, Gomez, I think.
Was that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that for me was like the way they showed their friendship and then just seeing how it then transpired and how it sort of evolved over time. For me, I didn't see that coming. Obviously, it wasn't like a long time before they eventually revealed who he was. Mm. But just from like the initial introduction to him and then seeing the change, that was actually like quite a...
Surprise,
like a real surprise. Yeah, and I think, to be honest, I liked it. For me, it wasn't... I don't want to talk about things that I don't like, because that's quite easy. We'll talk about that later. But I think in terms of what I did like, yeah, I liked the storyline. I liked the effort that they made to explore the events that they were trying to tell. And I think that when I said the development of the story as well, so like the whole tension between like trying to get John Dewar to be part of them and the feel of the suspense and him like trying to escape trying to like avoid them and trying to get out to like release or to unfold the truth. I felt like that created a real moment of tension. Yeah, in a realistic and in a believable manner as well at the time. And I think they also like portrayed the reality of the military at the time in a way that was realistic. For somebody who knows nothing, I wasn't born at the time or anything, but I think looking at it and sort of from like a historical lens or from knowledge and things like that, I felt like it tried to give us an insight just into the politics of the military. Because when you think of democracy, you think of politics, but then there's actually a lot of politics in the military as well.
Yeah, there is. That's a good point, actually. Yeah,
there's a lot of politics in the military as well. So yeah, those were just some of the few things that I liked about it.
Yeah, I think I feel as though there were some good moments of tension. I think for me though, the pacing of the film wasn't quite right for me. So I felt as though there were some things that were just dragging on for too long where they could have just sped that up. Because I watched the film twice. Because on the first watching, I did not understand.
Listen, because I can't afford to watch any film twice. I'm proper like, yeah, what are they saying?
I didn't understand. Because the first time I just wanted to watch it as a, you know, normal like audience member. And I didn't get what was going on. And then I watched it the second time and I watched it on 1.5 speed. With subtitles. So I really make sure that I was catching everything that was going on. And I actually felt as though the watching it on the 1.5 speed actually made it more enjoyable.
Right.
For me. Not a lot of filmmakers will be like, that's terrible, you should have done that. But I just feel as though the moments, the tense moments didn't drag on as long. Anyway, that's an aside.
Yeah.
But I think it would have been really good to have this as a series. I feel as though maybe if it was, instead of a 2-hour film, maybe it was like a 3 or 4 part series where they could have got into more depth. And the reason why I say that is because the relationship, for example, between Joseph and Susie, I felt as though was underdeveloped. Towards the end of the film, you feel the heartbreak of Susie because towards the end of the film, she's put under pressure to betray Joseph because he can't give account for where he was the night that the head of state was assassinated. But for me, when it got to that moment, the build up of their relationship didn't feel quite satisfying for me. It was like you saw, okay, they love each other. She's pregnant in the film. Oh, sweet, he's attending to her. But I didn't understand why the love was so deep. I don't know if that sounds cold. Like she's pregnant. She's his wife. But for me, I was like, I want to understand how they got to this point, because in the like synopsis that I explained, it says that he was a man from the Middle Belt and they met while she was studying O levels or something. I didn't catch that in the film.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like, well, I should have got that, you know, in the film, and maybe that would have, for me anyway, like added to the depth, so I too would have been broken when she had to betray her man. But for me, it didn't land in that initial way. So that was like one thing. If they had more like episodes,
yeah,
in a series.
I think I see what you mean, because then even when John was eventually put in prison, or when he was
Joseph
was eventually detained, and the army official who was investigating the coup and, you know, arresting the people, went to the house and said, you know, tried to introduce new elements into their relationship to build distrust, and the way in which she was able to believe it. And I just thought, how is it that somebody comes and just tells you stuff and you're able to believe it, knowing that you and your husband have always had this kind of unity against your family members? Mm. And why would you think that this person who has stood by you, for whom you have deserted your family, all of a sudden you're just able and willing to accept what, you know, these people have told you? And also, I find it that I was quite annoyed by her when Joseph. And it's right in front of me, Joseph. When Joseph eventually came home through all the times when he was trying to escape from the barracks, because they tried to like block him from getting out to spill the beans, and she had been waiting dressed up for this event that they were meant to go to. Mm. If I know my husband is an army official and he's a police officer, or he's someone within in the line of duty that is dangerous, you know that anything can happen at any time. Mm. I felt like it was a stupid reason, well, because you were meant to go for this occasion that he told you before he left the house he was going to make. You had no reason to think he wasn't going to make it. For me as a woman, as a wife, my initial reaction is going to be, what is going on with him? Is he okay? You know, has something happened? But for them to just kind of come and it's like, oh, now she's upset, and now she's like storming into the house, and now like they're not talking. Mm. And then you've left this brother who has been so silly all the while. Mm. You just left him in your house to go through stuff, and you're just sitting outside upset. I felt like it was a bit... They tried to create tension in that moment, but I felt like he just wasn't hitting it for me, because I'm like, why is she upset? And what is happening here? And she even saw the guy coming to tell her stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
That should have raised her suspicions,
because then the army were coming and then they just took him and left. And you're not thinking, is this normal? So for me in that moment, I was just like, oh, you failed, man. Like, this is not it. This is not it.
Yeah, what I wish they also went into more detail about is the reason as to why the family were, you know, there was disunity in the family. Why did Susie's family not like Joseph? I think there was some hint at, you know, some tribal issues, which is, you know, a point which... To me, it wasn't explicit, but maybe.
Yeah, because I don't even know if
Joseph.
I don't know if he's Yoruba. I don't know what tribe it's from.
Listen, I was searching. I was like, where's the name Dewa from? And I was like, I couldn't find
anything. So if any of our listeners know, please, you know, hint us. But yeah, it wasn't clear. So it was quite clear that there was tribal differences and that the main tension with the family. But again, it wasn't very clear, because I'm just thinking, okay, maybe Yoruba and Igbo, maybe something to do with the legacy of, you know, of the war and, you know, how the country then developed since then. But yeah, it wasn't well established for me.
Yeah, it wasn't well established, because that would have really helped then understanding the motivation of Susie's brother,
yeah,
who is part of the, what's the word, betrayal, mm-hmm, and setting. Susie's brother is part of the conspiracy to set Joseph up and frame him as being part of the coup for, mm-hmm, the assassination. And I didn't understand why. I didn't understand how Susie's brother was even involved.
This is the thing.
With Gomez, the friend. I didn't get any of it. So that's why I think it would have been good maybe to have several episodes, because I feel so there's actually a really interesting story point there where you could have really invested time into, you know, the division of the family. Maybe the brother is like, you know what, I'm going to get, you know, Joseph, mm, back for taking my sister away from our family.
Mm.
And I mean, yeah.
I think they tried to do that there. If you remember where the father and the brother came into the house, and because, mm, she was meant to be the one who's been paying for his accommodation anyway. Because remember when she tried to go to his house later on in the film, and then he didn't open up the door for her, and she said, "Oh, in the house that I'm paying for, now you're not gonna let me into the house."
I thought it was even the house that Joseph was even paying for it. Anyway,
I guess
they're one. So.
The two has become one. Yeah, so I think they tried to build up that tension, and I can sort of see why or how he was then involved in plots, because if my brother, my sibling's best friend, you know, if, but I feel like that brother was evil.
Why?
He was just evil. Like,
I mean, he was from the get go, but
to your sister. Because what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, that's actually quite mad.
That's what did you... What? She's going to... And you knew she was pregnant. Like, even if you don't like the guy, like, what they were trying to do in setting him up and the length and the extent that they went to try to set him up, I felt like that was just evil, evil, evil.
But it was because he was known to be a quote-unquote snitch for other coup plots or attempts.
Mm.
So that's why they wanted to get... That's why Gomez and Susie's brother and the other military officials... They tried to get him on their
side so they won't snitch on them.
Try to get him on their side, or I think... See, this is why I need to watch it twice. Try and get him out of the picture. Because when they were... For example, there's a moment where it's established that Gomez is actually part of this coup plot.
Yeah.
And he lures Joseph to this secret house. And there are other military officials who say, we need to get rid... of, mm-hmm, Dewa, aka Yolanda.
I know her. What a random name.
So when that happened, this, and I think this is sort of just a larger point, as I think there were things that were interesting that could have been explored but didn't quite join up,
mm-hmm,
for me.
Mm-hmm.
In the film.
I think they had a good attempt though at, again, speaking just in terms of the storyline and in terms of the kind of tension that they created, and even like Joseph's character, you know, like when the friend lured him into the house and the way he, because he played true to the character they developed for him. I feel like, you know, sometimes you're trying to portray somebody as this like smart detective whatnot, and then you're watching them, you're like, how is this guy meant to be the detective? Like, you know, it doesn't fit the bill. But in some of the actions that he took and the way that he conducted himself, he was a believable character. I think his character was believable as far as his army involvement was concerned. I think it did quite well.
And what moving into, you know, themes around the army and the military and, you know, conspiracy and corruption, like, what are some of the themes that really stood out to you in the film?
I think the corruption they were trying to... Well, I don't know. I think the corruption that has been known to mar the military regime was subtly portrayed. So remember the neighbour, the woman? They have a neighbour.
That's even another point, but you can see. Yeah.
They had a neighbour, the woman, and her husband was also in the military. He was also in army.
The woman that shall not be named, just the woman with
the afro. Yeah, because she... So basically, they portrayed her as this kind of like easygoing, free lifestyle, you know, just like meant to be sophisticated, had her own vices like smoking and, drinking and partying, and she had this army. I don't even know if he was a husband or just her boyfriend.
I think he was her husband.
Her husband, who also enabled her in all of the things that she was doing. Then you put them against, because they lived next door to
Joseph
Dewa. I was going to say John Dewa. Next door to Joseph Dewa. And here was Joseph every morning trying to kickstart his car, pouring water and oil and everything, trying to, you know, pushing it on the road and everything is leaking and all that stuff. But then you've got this neighbor who gets picked up in the morning in a nice truck and has like attendant officers.
Yeah.
So the contrast, I think the contrast of their lives was kind of like subtly introduced in there, where, because if you remember in the end, I was quite surprised that that lady's husband was then picked up as well as part of the coup.
Were you? He was there in the house with Gomez and the
other. I didn't recognize him.
It was dark in that place.
It was dark. I didn't recognize him. So I was like, oh, well, it makes sense eventually. But yeah, he was involved. And I think the way they portrayed Dewa was to show that he wasn't involved in all of the politics of whatever was going on, where they were probably embezzling money and some army officials were living more
affluent
than others. And I think so that, because if you ask me, I would say that's probably the only purpose of having them next door to each other. Well, not the only purpose, but I guess the in terms of their story and him being eventually picked up, that contrast of just their lives and how some army officials are probably living, you know, affluently in comparison to others, and what that meant for their livelihood, what that meant for the kind of temptation that they had to deal with, how many of them could have easily just like gotten engaged in certain plots and certain activities for the purposes of their own financial gain. So yeah, I think the portrayal of corruption in that sense.
Yeah, that's actually a really good insight. I didn't see it that way, actually, because I was actually really interested in the nuggets of like context that they were providing to us throughout the film. So similar to Half of the Yellow Sun, there were radio snippets of, and I believe that they were actual real radio clips from around the time. But on the radio, speak about why Nigeria had removed itself from the 1976 Olympics. Dewa, when he was arguing with Gomez in the house, he said he's fighting for a cause more glorious than anything to do with communism. And you think, why are you, you know, raising that point? So these like little nuggets I thought were really interesting, because then it made me want to research more about why that was. So Nigeria, in solidarity with South Africans, didn't want to participate in the Olympics because of apartheid. And then makes you think about the wider global context of, you know, were in the thick of like decolonization, the Vietnam War. I think the Vietnam War had like ended at this point. It was still going on. Just like all those things was really interesting for me. But yeah, those were the wider global
impacts. Yeah.
And that context like helped to inform the mentality and the feeling that was, you know, occurring at the time. And I think the point you raised about corruption, and then that being mirrored with the idea of like loyalty and allegiance, you know, that you can be fighting side by side, working side by side.
Yeah.
You're supposed to have this same cause, like Joseph said, we're supposed to be fighting for a more glorious cause. And I believe he was referring to, you know, One Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, that's not happening. Mm-hmm. There's a clear division.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the context, knowing that it's not been that long since the Biafran War like officially ended.
Yeah.
I thought those were really like interesting themes to bring up in the film.
Yeah. I would be quite interested to know how much the Nigerian government were involved in the development of the story.
I think they were quite involved, actually. In my research, the director and the film, the team consulted the military a lot around the film. So I think they like provided like training and some insight into the various drills and I'm sure like uniform and yeah, while the film was going on. Yeah. So there was some contribution from them.
Yeah, I think it's easy to believe that because in a sense you can see the influence and how the way that Half of a Yellow Sun shied away from like delving into certain things, I felt like this particular film didn't quite do that. However, I still think that it didn't go into enough because, for example, if I didn't already know what 1976 was about or have an idea of what happened or who was killed, I don't think it was very well pronounced about who was actually killed.
I don't even think
they mentioned his name.
I think his name might have been mentioned in a radio clip. Yeah. But quite frankly, the characters should have been relaying that information to the audience.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. That wasn't clear. Yeah. That's why I had to watch it twice.
Listen, I'm committed, but yeah, I couldn't afford to watch it. I can't afford to watch any film twice. But yeah, so like, I felt like that wasn't very clear. And so there was a bit of shock coming in that sense. But ooh, can we talk very briefly just about when they were investigating Dewa? Mm-hmm. I thought the guy who was investigating him was actually part of them. It wasn't very clear to me for a while that he was actually genuinely investigating him.
Yes, and you know the reason why is because the way the actor was portraying this character, he was looking very sly, walking slowly into the interrogation room, trying to play this very suave, I know what I'm doing character. Yeah, I think the portrayal probably confused me as a member of the audience because you're right, I thought he was part of the coup.
Yeah, I thought it was part of them until obviously like the whole ID card situation, because I thought initially that the brother had taken it from underneath the bed where Dewa put it, and then it turned out it was in the wife's purse, and then she found it and then went and gave it to him. I'm just like, lady, really? Like, you know, I mean, I don't know how clued up you're meant to be about this kind of stuff, but I would think if my husband was meant to be this, you know, smart army guy, I would have picked up one or two things from him over the years. But
yeah, you would hope so. That's a good point, actually. I did think he was part of the coup plotters, but I think generally, the film, as we've said before, with other films, it was a good entry point. I became genuinely intrigued into like the situation, and just simply because I actually didn't know like what was going on at some instances, I had to research more about the finer details of the film.
Yeah. I did think it was a bit weird to introduce his sister. Although I can see the lead up to it, like she'd been asking about his family and didn't know who his family was, and then all of a sudden she came back.
No, there was no lead up, Lara. You're being very generous.
This was the whole way that they caught her, that they kind of like trapped her, where it was like, oh, she doesn't know who his family members are, and the guy had shown her a picture of a woman which she thought that was the woman that he was cheating with.
Yeah.
So I can see how, like,
on second watching now, I remember.
So I can see how, like, you know, because they'd already had fights about, oh, I don't know who your families are and all this stuff. And then that gap in their knowledge was then exploited by the guy who was investigating Dewa. Because if you knew who your husband's sister was, there's no way they will bring a picture before you and you'll be like, yeah, that's his sister, what are you talking about, you know? So I guess that gap in the knowledge kind of trapped her, and them bringing her at the very end, well, I don't know what to make of the story and everything, but
I think that's where the storytelling could have been improved.
Yeah,
because I think the filmmakers could have given the audience a few more instances or like dropped some information a bit earlier on that there was a sister.
Yeah.
Like maybe earlier on in the film, there was just a separate scene where we saw the sister maybe in London, or there was a flashback to when they were kids. Then it would have established with us that, okay, there is a family member that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And then it foreshadows that she's going to turn up again in the film. But there was... the foreshadowing was not strong enough.
She just randomly dropped.
Yeah. I even thought when she came to their house, I thought she was the drunkard woman.
Me too. Literally, me too. And then she started telling the story, I was like, did they put a different wig on this woman or what? Looked alike as well. Yeah. I thought they put a different wig on this woman or what. But yeah, I guess rounding up, what are sort of your takeaways from this film?
I think from this film, and I think we might touch on it in a future episode when we delve deeper into the 1976 coup. But I think what I took away from this, or what this film made me start thinking about, was just the legacy of the Biafran War and how this was a point in time where military rule was being institutionalized. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think maybe this film was used as a way to sanitize or like a PR move for the military?
I don't know. I didn't quite get that. But I did think, what I did think though, was the fact that they had ideologies. Like, many of them were committed to ideologies. They had things they believed in. In comparison to like the landscape in Nigeria today amongst our politicians and whatnot, it's just like, I don't even know what half of them are fighting for. I don't know what they believe in. I don't, what their plans, what their goals for Nigeria are, I don't really know. So I felt like, in a way, one could really see, rightly or wrongly, the fact was they had something that they were committed to as an ideology, right? And that was the driving force for many of them in terms of, you know, their actions and just how they committed themselves to the military. It also made me think about just the politics of the military and how that is still within Nigeria today. So I think of the people who, how many democratic presidents of Nigeria had since 1999? I think if I'm counting, there was Obasanjo, then there was Yar'Adua who passed, then Goodluck Jonathan, then Muhammadu Buhari, right? So of four presidents, two of them have been ex-military. So General Obasanjo and Buhari. So it's almost like,
are we
actually able to escape it? So we're half and half at the moment. And actually, funny enough, of the many years of democratic rule we've had, Obasanjo ruled for two terms. Buhari is ruling for two terms. So 16 years of ex-military ruling Nigeria in a current democratic, you know, you just kind of think, have we actually really come out of the whole politics of everything that it was, and how much of it is still influencing and impacting Nigeria till today? So yeah, the more I think about it, the more I'm just thinking, are we even there yet?
That's a really good point, actually. And I think that's a good way to, you know, end this episode. And maybe we can explore more of those questions in our next episode. But we want to thank our listeners for
thank
today.
Thank you, thank you.
And we'll get chatting and talking about more Nigerian history in the next episode. So.
Yeah, don't chat us up, chat to us.
If you've been a listener for a long time, you'll know what that means. Inside joke. All right, everyone. Bye.
Later, guys. So, guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it and learnt a thing or two.
Yep, you can find our episodes on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to keep up with us in between episodes, you can follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Niger.
You can also find links to some further reading and information about the episode's topic in the show notes. If you want to encourage, collaborate, or as I like to say, support the ministry, drop us an email at onceuponaniger@gmail.com. Bye for now.
Bye.